Hello, and welcome to the Cisco Data Center Architecture Podcast. My name is Bobby Guhasarkar, and I'm a marketing manager in Cisco's enterprise marketing organization. I'm really excited to record the first of a series of podcasts that we have planned on the data center in the next 12 months. We hope to provide you with useful current information on some of the latest happenings in the data center. So let's get started. Our topic today is data center facilities. And we have three gentlemen here to help us understand facilities and what's happening in the facilities space. First, to my right, is Jack Tyson. Jack is from Panduit. Jack, why don't you tell us a little bit about Panduit and your role there?
I'm Jack Tyson. I'm Vice President of Technology for Panduit Corporation. We're a data communications, cabling infrastructure, and electrical products manufacturer, and we provide a lot of the infrastructure products for the data center.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks for being here today. To my left, I have Paul Marcoux from APC. Hi, Paul.
Thank you, Bobby, for having us here. How are you doing?
Good.
APC is a worldwide manufacturing corporation that produces both power and air conditioning products for the data center environment.
Great. Thanks. And lastly, we have Doug Alger. Doug is actually from Cisco. Doug is in Cisco's IT side of the house. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Bobby.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your role is in our IT organization?
Sure. I'm specifically involved with Cisco's data center infrastructure team. Our group designs, supports, and manages all of Cisco's data center facilities around the world.
Wow. It sounds like you've got one of the most important jobs in the company besides chambers.
Well, we would like to think so.
Great. So why don't we get started? Gentlemen, what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about what we're hearing from our customers in the data center. So I think the best way to sort of sum up what we see happening in the data center is that folks are really starting to look at the way that they architect their infrastructure. So, you know, classically what we've seen is each application, whether it's CRM or whether it's patient care delivery, has been sitting on its own dedicated servers and dedicated storage, along with the dedicated network services such as firewalls or load balancers. And I think what most folks are seeing is that at 25% utilization for most of this infrastructure, it simply is not sustainable. So most folks are really starting to look at a lot of the virtualization technologies to really start to drive greater utilization. So what do I mean? I mean specifically things like blade servers or storage arrays are certainly getting more dense, and certainly from Cisco's perspective, a lot of the network switches have more and more functionality, whether we're integrating firewalls or denial of service protection or things like that. So that's what we're seeing from a data center architecture trend perspective. Let me ask you all what you're hearing from your customers in the data center.
Well, what we're seeing is actually what you've alluded to. We do see now much larger densities in blade servers. We do see the areas of storage area networks being enhanced, and we do have some network switches that are actually being installed in more and more dense areas. Some of the problems that this is occurring now is this density, or this, we'll say, system compaction is driving up the utilization of air conditioning and power and other areas and weight problems. So these are all the issues that we're dealing with.
Great. Jack, are you hearing similar things from the customers that you speak to over at Panduit?
We absolutely are. From a high-density situation, the newer switches, the newer hardware, for instance, and the number of connection points, the amount of cabling that has to be managed in a new data center is a significant issue. And the attendant problems with managing that cable inside of server cabinets and switch gear, for instance, that can have an effect on the cooling of those very critical pieces of hardware.
So it sounds to me, I mean, if I were to look at it from a layman's perspective, that things are getting more dense. Would that be accurate to say that servers are getting more dense, storage arrays are getting more dense, and it's the density of what you're requiring from a power perspective or from a cooling perspective that's creating the problem?
I say that's correct. The processor densities are increasing. 1RU servers, blade centers, things of that nature are essentially... the heat loads in each of these individual cabinets, for instance, are going up tremendously. And Paul and I have discussed in the past the amount of hardware going into a specific square foot of data center these days is an incredible amount.
Okay.
You might even consider it that the typical rack 5 years ago probably had 3,000 watts. Today, that rack can normally go easily to 15,000 to 20,000 watts. And there are other racks that can go many times that.
Okay, okay. Doug, what about within Cisco's own IT organization? What sort of things have you been seeing from an infrastructure perspective? I would say an IT infrastructure perspective, and therefore having some ramifications on the facility side.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing a significant move toward this generation of machines that are much smaller, much faster. So they provide a significant amount more productivity. You can build what they call composite hosts, so you can have multiple smaller machines that can share the load. They're a lot more flexible. They provide a tremendous amount of benefits for IT. They're often a lot less expensive. The other side of that coin, however, is there's a growing impact on the infrastructure. And essentially any data center that hasn't just been built probably was not built to handle that density of machines. So it tends to have an impact on your cooling, on your ability to support weight, juggling port densities. Everything changes as the machines get smaller.
Okay, okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's in a data center facility. For those people that may be listening that are not in the facility space, they may not understand fully what's actually going inside a data center from a facility standpoint. So, Paul, why don't you just give us a little bit of a rundown on what typically you might put into a data center facility?
Sure. Well, let's take a look at the modern data center facility as opposed to what it was historically.
Okay.
Historically, we had standalone UPSs that sat in an area adjacent to the data center environment. It wasn't part of it. We had air conditioners, generators, again, all separated from the main area in a data center. And the principal reason was is because the power and cooling requirements allowed that to happen. With the newer data centers now, this is not quite the way you have to consider that being built. Now you have to incorporate the UPSs, which is the uninterruptible power supply, and the cooling systems right into the data center. So historically, we've moved from decentralized to a very centralized type construction environment.
Okay. And what about for cabling, Jack? How has the classical cabling design in the data center been, and how is it changing?
And again, Paul and I have discussed this in the past. In the old days, in the days of the mainframe, for instance, cabling was sort of done on an ad hoc basis, if you will. Not much thought put into it. It was run as you need it sort of approach. Now this has to be organized in a very careful manner because of the cooling requirements that are being placed upon the new data center. For instance, the cabling pathways can either be an obstruction or they can be a vital characteristic of enhancing the airflow as it's directed to these particular hotspots in the data center. So you're looking at overhead pathways and underfloor pathways because the cabling volume has increased. And how you manage those cables and ensure that bend radiuses are protected, et cetera, are very important to the transmission characteristics as well.
Okay. Let's talk about one thing you mentioned, the raised floor environment. So, you know, I've heard a lot of differing opinions on the raised floor, whether or not all data centers should be built with a raised floor. You know, I've certainly seen a few raised floor environments which are full of dirt. There's cabling spaghetti underneath that raised floor. I would imagine because the cooling systems are coming in from under the floor that you're probably sacrificing a lot of ability to cool your servers if you have all that spaghetti down there. So any opinion from Panduit on what we should look at, whether a raised floor environment for cabling or over the rack environment for cabling?
I think it depends upon a couple of issues. Number one, the size of the data center is really a critical area, and I think probably Doug will speak to this in a little bit as well. If it's a big data center and you've got a lot of this high-density equipment and you organize it in a certain fashion, for instance, you'll see the requirements for overhead and underfloor cabling, simply too much volume of communications cabling to be run in any one spot. Although I believe that there are certain applications and certain small, medium business applications for data centers where an approach that doesn't require a raised floor is probably the best. It's faster to deploy, a little easier to manage, a little lower cost, of course, because the raised floors are an expensive item in a data center.
Okay, okay. Let me see if I can recap here. So in the data center facility, you're talking about UPS or backup power. You're talking about an air conditioning unit or cooling. You're talking about the floor environment, which we just talked about. What about the sort of physical housing or the racks? I imagine in the mainframe days, it was really about the mainframe box, and you know, you bought that from your mainframe vendor, and then you know, the mainframe sat in its own box and so on. When you went to Open Systems, you really start to deconstruct the computing and put that into separate units, and now you needed a rack to do that. So what are some of the issues that you're hearing about racks and maybe about the way that these open systems are being put into the racks?
Well, some of the areas that we've discovered is the how you place equipment in the racks. First of all, some of the more denser environments now require what we call hot and cold aisles. That was unheard of even 5 years ago. The process for that is to have all the cold air essentially come out in front of the rack, where all the equipment then can draw in the air, pass it through the equipment to keep it cool, and then it ejects it out the back. One of the real problems that data center managers seem to have is that the exhaust temperature of a data center coming out of the rack has absolutely no bearing on anything. What you're concerned with is the intake temperature going into the rack. So if the rack temperature comes out at 90 degrees, it has no meaning in the hot aisle. But what you need is the right temperature going in the front of the rack.
I see. Okay. All right. So I guess that sort of somewhat summarizes what you might think of as facilities when you think about a data center facility. So you both have talked about different challenges that folks are having, and certainly, you know, I've been hearing a lot about that from a lot of the sessions that we do with customers. I'm just wondering, are there standards in your industry? I mean, such as, you know, IEEE is a standard in the networking industry. Are there standards in your industry that are looking at the facilities, how to cool, how to design these racks, how to look at power and so on, Jack?
Actually, there's a Telecommunications Industry Association, TIA, that's actually just finished a standard, TIA 942, that is pointed directly at the data center. This standard's built on a lot of previous TIA work that's been done for connectivity, for pathways and spaces, for administration and labeling, if you will, so that you know every place in the data center is labeled effectively, as well as grounding and bonding. The interesting part about this standard that's been now it is in reality been passed or finalized is that it's built on also industry input. So you have input from an organization called ASHRAE, which is the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers. And you also have input from a very critical body of businesses in the industry, the Uptime Institute. You'll find a number of very prominent companies that take part in the Uptime Institute, and they got together to decide, what are the critical elements of running a business-ready data center? What's really important on the uptime requirements, et cetera? And so they helped contribute to this standard that's been recently passed.
Okay. Let me just ask Doug a question here. So, Doug, as a facilities manager yourself, do you look at standards, or is that something that's a part of the way that you look to design and manage the facilities?
It's certainly an excellent starting point that we go from. Let me actually clarify one thing, though. My group is actually in the IT organization. We tend to work a lot with the facilities guys. I don't want any of the facilities folks thinking I'm taking one of their titles. So we end up being really just hopefully a very well-educated client group. So we will come and talk to them, and they're specifically involved with making sure we have the cooling that we need. We have all of this infrastructure provided for us, and then it's our job to really manage and design it correctly. We do certainly use the standards as a starting point. It's been very encouraging to see a lot of these take place. We, Cisco, actually participate as a member of the Uptime Institute, so we've had our opportunity to make at least a small contribution to some of those, and it's been very good because it used to be that you could come out and look at different companies' data centers, and they would be built in multiple different ways, and a lot of companies really only have an opportunity to work with a data center once or twice, and so that learning curve can be pretty steep to figure out what to do. And so these standards are really do a good job of providing a baseline of when you go to build the room, some certain things you need to do correctly.
Great. So then it's not just the theoretical folks sitting there writing these PhD stuff. It's really useful in the practical world as well.
Yes. So a lot of just minor details that would come up as you were trying to design a room. There would be discussions, say, of trying to keep your data cabling and your power separate. Well, how far apart should I have these things? Well, a lot of it depends on the different type of cabling. Prior to a lot of the standards being established, it was just as informal as it's a good idea to keep these things separate, period, where some of these standards can actually give you some physical distance that can help as you're figuring out how you want to lay cable, what distances, and what sort of shielding you need for them.
Great, great. Okay. So I guess if we've got the standards to look at how to solve some of the problems that we're talking about before, some of the challenges that customers are facing, what are Panduit and APC doing in terms of their approach or your approach developing the technologies to incorporate some of the recommendations from the standards and then start to look at possibly newer ways of designing facilities?
We're focusing at the areas of scalability and reliability, manageability and security. Those are the four areas we're really focusing on. For instance, in the manageability area, we know that data center floor space is extraordinarily expensive. So we're looking at these higher density pieces of equipment, the new Cisco switches that are very high density, and providing patch field infrastructure that allows you to manage that patching in a very effective way, for instance, without causing problems with the hot swap capabilities of the switch itself, so that you can have access to the fan module, the power module, et cetera, without causing a network interruption due to the cabling being routed in an improper manner. We also look at how we route it relative to the cooling inside the cabinet itself and look at how the cable infrastructure has an effect on that cooling flow.
Well, you know, we were talking about cabling before. I imagine with the increased number of servers that you can put into a rack, that necessitates an increased amount of cabling that goes into a rack, which to me indicates that that's additional weight. So now there must be some way around getting all that weight that comes from the cabling into that rack off. I mean, are there things that you're looking at in terms of possibly distributing the way that cables are coming in and using that kind of methodology?
Certainly, and as you know, blade server technology and the ability to do that in that format allows you to reduce cabling infrastructure to some degree, but although there are choices in that area as well. We also are looking at deployments of cabling in a way that we can segregate zones to prevent over-cabling in certain areas, if you will, and providing the appropriate number of connection points to a particular cabinet. So those kinds of things we're doing as well. And as you know, some of the floor loading issues that have come up and the unit loading that these cabinets can apply to a raised floor can be fairly severe. You have to be careful on how many floor tiles you pull up at one time. For instance, the stability of the floor may be affected. So all those things are considerations of things that Paul and I have in the days of the mainframe, these are brand new issues for us. That load was distributed before, and now it's a very small footprint on this 2x2 tile that's accepting very, very high unit loads.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually a good segue for Paul. So, Paul, what are you doing at APC from a technology perspective? We heard about the standards. Jack talked a little bit about some of the things that they're doing with cabling. What are you all looking at in the Chief Technology Office about specifics around power and specifics on cooling that take some of the recommendations from those standards and possibly put them in usable technology and product line?
Absolutely. It's driving our entire organizational development. What we have now, with the needs now of higher density servers, we're now taking the cooling load and moving it from the peripheral area of the data center and now bringing it as close to the load as actually possible. In some instances, we're actually placing the entire racks within a cooling environment. That's now become possible. The uninterruptible power supplies have become now part of the rack infrastructure system. So you now have the power and air conditioning all incorporated on the raised floor. And like Jack was saying, this is a very important thing. We always have to make sure that the floor has the capacity to support that weight. But one of the things that most people tend to forget is that that floor, if it's not on, we'll say, slab on grade, the first floor of a building, it may be on an elevated floor, second, third floor. The building's structural floor that the raised floor sits on needs to be looked at, because that may not actually be able to carry the weight for a data center. So those are areas that, yes, that need to be studied.
Now, tell me a little bit about how you're developing your modular power. You mentioned that before. When I think modular, being in the IT space, I think putting in a blade server, putting in Ethernet module into my 6500,
right,
or putting in a firewall module into my 6500. When you say modular power, I mean, do you have similar types of capability to add power, add backup power when you need it, and it's kind of dynamic?
Absolutely. What we're doing now is our UPSs are no longer comprised of essentially one big box. They're actually taken from the same type of development that Cisco uses. It's a very modular form. It's actually small integrated UPSs incorporating one larger unit. And that's allows if a failure should occur, an unlikely event, but even if it does occur, it doesn't take the entire system down. And all it is a simply plug in and plug out.
Great. That's great. What just struck me is probably one of the most important things is management. And, I'm thinking that building management, facilities management has classically been a dry contact type of device, and the folks that are managing it are actually not at all anything to do with IT. They're sitting in a different part of the building. Is there any work that you all have done with regards to management? I mean, can I get this now by SNMP? And if I can, what can I get?
Very much so. We've now have an entire product line that essentially allows the help desk, the IT help desk, to manage its own infrastructure area. It can take a look at the individual power that any one rack is using and or an entire data center is using. So these allow them to manage essentially to say, if somebody wants to put in more servers in a particular rack, whether or not they actually can. Up until now, that type of metering just didn't exist. It also has a huge cost savings in terms of allowing it to go over the company's own infrastructure.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. You know, the other subject that we haven't talked about at all that I have heard some of our customers talk about, Jack, is grounding. And the way that we've been hearing about it is if you've got more servers or storage arrays in a particular area, the potential for electric discharge becomes greater because I've obviously got more assets in a set real estate area. I don't know anything about grounding, so educate me and our audience here on grounding and why it's important and how do you do it properly.
Now, that's a very good topic to discuss because it's becoming very, very important in the data center that this very expensive hardware be grounded appropriately. It's not just for safety, but safety is a huge issue as well. Anytime there is a lightning strike or any kind of a high voltage situation like that within a data center facility, a very low impedance pathway to the building's ground structure is required for both a safety aspect and from protection for the equipment. We see that also, as you mentioned, from ESD strategy, or electrostatic discharge. Any kind of activity like that would cause electrostatic discharge on a piece of hardware would potentially cause damage. So the grounding that we're approaching now, we're using what we call a structured ground system. And anyone that's in the facilities area knows what structured cabling is, the Category 5E, Category 6 cabling infrastructure. We're actually applying that technology, that strategy, to the grounding system. so that when the infrastructure is put in place, the racks, the cabinets, and the bonding network in general, we are applying this structured ground approach that says that each of these pieces of equipment, each rack, each cabinet, has an appropriate low impedance path to ground. So that any kind of a lightning strike that's occurred, any kind of a coupling of high voltage onto the system is, it finds its best path to ground. In doing so, we think we've provided a level of protection for very expensive equipment, as well as enhanced significantly the uptime of the data center. We believe that in some cases, you know, there's been as much as $500 million of damage done each year in data center facilities due to lightning strikes and improper grounding.
And especially with more equipment going in there, I imagine this is even more important than
ever. No question, absolutely.
Great, thanks. Okay, so I guess we've talked about grounding, we've talked about cabling, we've talked about cooling, we've talked about power. Jack, you know, I'm wondering if you guys have done any research to actually show that looking at facilities in this new way or in a more modular way actually has any measurable benefits. Do you all have any studies on that? Can you share anything like that?
Yes, we do. APC has done an extensive amount of studies over the last few years on some of our customer base. And what we've discovered was that somewhere around between 20 to 25% is all that's actually being used of an install base. So the old days, the classic approach was you'd put in all the power, the cooling for essentially what would be expected 10 years down the road. Well, what we've discovered was that growth curve never really occurred. It kind of tapers off somewhere around the 3 and 4 year level and then goes from that maybe about 18% to all the way out to 10 years, which doesn't exceed 20, 22% on the average. So that area that we're talking about between what was originally installed and what is really being used is essentially wasted capital.
I see.
Now, the new approach that people are now considering and that we recommend is essentially, we call it a pay-as-you-grow approach.
So similar to an on-demand type of approach.
Absolutely. It's an on-demand approach. And then what happens is as the, we'll say, server environment begins to increase in size, then you increase its cooling and its power capacity to match that growth curve. By doing that, you've now used your capital in a most efficient manner. It allows essentially the reduction of wasted capital. And one of the things that people are finding a benefit is because a lot of data centers, about in the fifth year, generally have either reductions or growth spurts. This process allows you to be able to take advantage of both of them.
Okay. Have you got any studies then on APC's site that folks can look at? I mean, if you've got any metrics that you can share, that would be great.
Yes, we do.
Great. Okay, let me just shift gears here and get Doug involved in talking to us here about what we've done internally within Cisco IT. So, Doug, you've heard what these gentlemen had to say. I think a lot of good, interesting technology in the facilities space. Tell us a little bit about Cisco's own data centers and some of the challenges that you know we've had as an organization over the last 5 years and what you all did to meet those challenges.
Certainly. So as of today, Cisco has 45 data centers around the world. Put all together, they total to about 125,000 square feet. We're spread out in 11 countries, spanning 10 time zones. My particular team that supports them are primarily located in the United States. So one of the extra challenges we have is we're trying to support a lot of rooms that are spread out all over the place, so we need to do it remotely. As we touched on earlier in the conversation, the biggest change that we've seen in recent years has been systems getting smaller and hotter and heavier, greater port density. Everything is impacting the rooms more and more, certainly more than they were originally designed for. And we've seen that in our rooms just as many other companies have. One of the things where this has impacted us, cabling is a good example. So when we initially built some of our data centers, we used a direct connect cabling model. You'd pre-wire all of your server cabinet locations. You would run the cabling back to a main networking row. This seemed like a pretty good, straightforward approach. lasted for a couple of years. As we started to get additional systems going into that space, though, we found we had cable snarls underneath the floor. It was difficult to trace your connections from one point to another. You had a real rat's nest of cables underneath the floor.
Otherwise known as spaghetti.
Yes. And it was quite the headache to manage. So one of the things that we came up with to try and address that was, well, let's see if instead of running everything back to a single row, perhaps we can set up some network substations at the end of each row, run the connections from a given set of cabinets back to that substation, and then have a subset of connections still go back to the main row. The nice thing was, once we set that up for every single row in the room, we've created our own modularity. We've repeated the environment from row to row to row. If for some reason something breaks and there's a problem, I can just very quickly relocate my equipment into an adjacent row, which is set up the exact same way that the row prior to it was. So we essentially created an additional level of protection by putting in a cabling hierarchy. We liked this model so well, we started to do the same thing with our power. We used to run power directly from the power distribution units in the room, directly to each cabinet location. We started to install remote power panels at the end of each row, supply those from multiple power distribution units. Again, you've cut down the amount of power conduit you have underneath the floor.
So are you able to add power in that modular way that we had Paul talking about before? Is that the concept you're talking about there?
Very much so. So we will actually have a power panel that's at the end of the row that's partially filled with circuits. It has extra capacity that you can add to as needed. And since the conduit runs are very, very short, it's ready to go. I just need to have some minor work done, say, by an electrician to add in a circuit here or there or adjust the given receptacle that's actually going to be terminated at a different cabinet location. It's a very simple process to grow, or if you need to actually shrink and give space back.
I see. Well, you know, tell me about cooling. I think the biggest concern that most people have is cooling. How have you dealt with blades in your environment?
So cooling has been the biggest challenge for us, and we found a couple of different ways to address it. The simplest, which not all companies have this option, but if you do, is to simply allow more space. You spread out your rows. You don't pack the equipment in as tight as possible. This isn't always a real popular solution because part of the reason people got smaller boxes is so that they can put more in a given space. But in some cases, if you don't have additional infrastructure that you can add for cooling, a very low-tech way is just to spread everything out, make those small boxes take up the exact amount of space that the large systems did that they replaced. Other very low-tech things you can do: put some air dams inside your cabinet so that you don't have air. You're not trying to cool air going into spaces where there isn't any equipment. Make sure you're directing everything where it truly needs to go. I mentioned some of the substations at the end of the rows. One of the nice things about doing that is if you have less underfloor structured cabling, you have less electrical conduits under there, your airflow improves. You're not having to go through a mass of infrastructure that's underneath the floor. There was mention earlier about the hot and cold aisles, and that's a very efficient way of, yes, you're going to have hot spots, but if you set up hot and cold aisles, you can have the hot spots occur behind the exhaust of the machine and then draw it back with ducted returns to the air handlers, so you don't have it feeding into another row. You allow it to be hot that you don't care about. And then finally, just on top of that, is we try as much as possible to monitor temperatures in the room, in addition to the monitoring that tends to be built into the air handlers provided in the data centers. We've set up some independent systems of that do some ambient temperature monitoring, which is good because it gives you a good snapshot of what's going on in the room temperature-wise.
That's great. That's some good information. And, you know, I know you're going to be too modest to talk about your book, so I'll go ahead and talk about it now. For our listeners out there, Doug's recently written a Cisco Press book, which is titled "Build." I think it's "Build the Best." Help me out here. What's the title?
Data Center Facility for Your Business.
Build the Best Data Center Facility for Your Business. It's available on ciscopress.com. And essentially, I've read the book. It's a fantastic book. Essentially, what Doug has done is taken the collective IT team's efforts over the last few years for facilities and documented that. And there's quite a bit of detail in there. Doug, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's in the book?
Well, you've actually actually outlined it pretty well. We've tried to take as many of the things that we've learned from dealing with server environments over the years and document them. People can learn from the things we did right and learn from the things that we did wrong. Cisco, at this point, has had more than 100 company acquisitions, and almost all of them had some sort of server environment that my team had an opportunity to go in, take a look at, figure out what rooms we need to make upgrades to, what ones do we need to just let go away because they weren't built to a standard that we want them to, and just over time learn from dealing in all these rooms what solutions work and what ones don't. Cover all of the major infrastructure areas in a room, all of the ones that we've listed to this point. We also get into fire suppression. We also talk about once you have a room that's built, how do you manage it successfully so that we'll run efficiently, and all of the things that you've tried to do to make it a productive environment that you can keep it that way.
Great, great. Thanks. Well, that brings us to a close for this podcast. Before we go, I do want to draw your attention to a joint white paper that we've written, that Cisco, APC, and Panduit. The title of that white paper is called Facilities Considerations for the Data Center. That paper is available on Cisco's website as well as APC and Panduit's websites. Please have a look at that. And I also want to invite you to provide us feedback on these podcasts. If you go to the cisco.com page, you'll see the email address to give us feedback. We would like to hear from you. Let us know how you enjoy these podcasts, what you'd like to hear, and so on. So that's a wrap. I want to thank Jack, I want to thank Paul, and I want to thank Doug for being here.
Thanks,
Bobby.
Great. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Cisco Data Center Architecture Podcast.